It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. Good evening to the FM Talk 106.5 listening audience. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr. I am your Chief Accountability Advocate, and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to our ninth episode. We are really, really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. In studio, we have three fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Miss Aquilyn Kennedy.
Hey there.
Who did a fantastic job on the mic last week
when she
ended up hosting Kennedy for Alabama. The second is Mr. Robert Clopton, who is president of the Mobile Area NAACP. And third, Mr. Alec Barnett, who is president of the Baldwin County Area NAACP, who will be joining us by phone right around the first break. And finally, completing our in-studio team is Mr. Phil Bush, who is working the production board and last week for the first time spoke on mic. So go ahead and say hello to everybody, Phil.
Hey, what's up?
All right, all right. So, everyone, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing good. Doing
fantastic.
Good,
it's Friday.
Oh, yes. My gosh. This week's been crazy, hasn't it?
It's been crazy, but it's Friday and we're here.
Indeed. So, Aquilyn, tell me something good.
All right. First and foremost, God. God is good.
All the time.
And all the time.
God is good.
God is good. Amen. There's some really great things going on, despite how much is happening. I want to just actually first start on what would be a sad note, celebrating the work of some of our amazing leaders, especially those who've kind of fought through racism and things of that nature, which is very topical for tonight. We just celebrated Congressman Cummings last week, and today we've celebrated our Senator Leroy Johnson, first African-American senator, state senator since Reconstruction of Georgia. Really, really powerful. So that's what's good about that is that he did so much amazing work.
He really did.
We're elevating that again. We're bringing that to life. And hopefully these stories are going to inspire more and more people to get active because change will come when we actually do the work. Second thing I want to talk about is The Franchise Woman, brand new magazine that's launched. Very excited about that. Digital magazine, bi-monthly. It's going to be fantastic. So congratulations to the Franchise Woman. If you are in business and looking for that, take a look at that. And the last thing, wonderful organizations that are doing great work, again, around this bridging the divide. There's one organization called Shrink the Divide, another called Faith in Action. Two fantastic organizations of faith, really focused on helping to bring different groups together. Sunday being the most segregated day of the week, we need to find ways to do that. And
Absolutely. So
excited about that. That's what's good.
All right, Aquilyn, thank you so much. So in terms of the agenda, in the top half of the hour, we'll review news headlines from the last 7 days, introduce tonight's first discussion topic, and start the conversation in studio with Mr. Clopton and continue that conversation on the phone with Mr. Barnett. In the bottom half of the hour, we're going to do a quick citizen spotlight with our surprise guest. So please tune in to the bottom half of the hour to see who that surprise guest is. With that, let's go to the headlines. The first headline comes from the Montgomery Advertiser. It reads, Alabama Democratic Party leader sues to stop Saturday meeting. The article was written by Brian Lyman and published on 30 October 2019. What did the author say? ADP Chair Nancy Worley and Vice Chair Randy Kelly sued a faction of the state Democrats planning to hold leadership elections on Saturday. The second headline comes from AL.com. It reads, Financial Benefits, Shifting Racial Demographics Highlight Mobile Discussion on Annexation. It was written by John Sharp and published on 31 October 2019. What did the article say? Mobile will retain its majority-minority status even if annexation is approved. According to Wetterman, there is not getting around the fact that the gap between black and white narrows, but it's still a substantial amount of black population. The final headline for tonight's show comes from WHNT.com. The headline reads, DNC chair backs vote for new leader among Alabama Democrats. The article was published by the Associated Press today, November 1st, 2019. What did the article say? Upstarts have adopted rules backed by national leaders to increase diversity in the state party in which Black caucus chairman Joe Reed, a vice chairman who serves with Nancy Worley, has been a major player for decades. So, this brings us to our first discussion topic. Can something be racial without being racist? I'll say that again. Can something be racial without being racist? So, Robert, as leader of a local NAACP chapter, what do you think?
Well, I think the answer to that is yes.
Okay.
We speak of racial, we're relating to a group, which humankind is sometimes divided on physical characteristics or shared ancestry. However, because that ethnicity or particular group is united, does not determine on whether or not they are racist.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting when I think about life growing up here in Mobile, and I think about two aspects of that life, part of it being my community life, part of it being my church life, those environments were 100% Black. But when I think about my professional life, my academic life, those lives were integrated. So we are about to go to a break here for just a few minutes, and we will continue this conversation on the other side. Stay with us at Kennedy for Alabama.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Lines are open at 251-343-0106. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. If you would like to give us a call to share your thoughts, please call us at area code 251-343-0106. I say again, 343-0106. So before we went to the break, we had teed up the discussion topic, which is, can something be racial without being racist? And so at that point, Mr. Robert Coppin and I started a conversation, and I was explaining how growing up here in Mobile, my church experience and my community experience was 100% Black, whereas my school experience and ultimately my work experience became more integrated. And so one of the things that I often found when I was having these conversations in integrated audiences was that people would have a tendency to ask, well, why do you have something like the NAACP? And normally these are non-Black people, with some sort of implication or suggestion that the organization itself is inherently racist. Can you address that a little bit? Just tell people, explain what the NAACP is and why it is that we need to have one?
Well, a couple of things, Robert. First, I gave you my definition on being racial.
Yes.
But then again, when we look at being a racist, it's prejudice or antagonistic toward people.
Exactly.
Because of their membership in said racial demographics. The NAACP is a mixture. It's a mixture. We're combined.
Mm-hmm.
We're all people. It was started in 1909, and two of the main characters there was Mrs. Adams and W.D.B. Du Bois.
Okay.
Mrs. Adams was white.
Mm-hmm.
W.D. DeBoe was Black.
Right.
Jews somewhat facilitated the NAACP, their moves, their actions in the early beginnings.
Right.
Now, the mission of the NAACP, regardless of whether you're Black or white, our mission stands to serve all people. Mm-hmm. And that mission is to ensure the political, educational, social, and economic equality of rights for all people.
Excellent, excellent. I'm going to pause you just for a second. I'm going to go to the phone line to see if we have anybody with us. Hello, you are on the line with Kennedy for Alabama. Who do we have?
Eric Barnett.
Hey, Mr. Barnett, how are you doing today? Mr. Barnett, can you hear us okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right, speak up just a little bit because we're having a problem hearing you. So we started our conversation with Mr. Clopton here in studio. So can you just tell the listening audience a little bit about who you are and what you're doing with the NAACP?
I am the president of Baldwin County NAACP. And, you know, like Mr. Clopton said, you know, this is, you know, this whole diverse organization that we fight for civil rights. You know, everyone has civil rights, so, you know, that's what we stand for.
Thanks a lot for that explanation. And I think one of the common misperceptions that I've seen, because I've been to meetings on both sides of the bay, that there is a significant number of folks that are not African American who are actually part of both of these organizations on both sides of the coast. Now, my question for you, Mr. Barnett, first of all, is what are the types of issues that the NAACP addresses beyond what folks may have typically think of when there's some sort of problem? Can you talk to that at all?
Well, yeah, you know, racial discrimination on jobs. We deal with the EEOC a lot.
Okay.
You deal with school issues, you know, that the pipeline to prison thing that goes, it's very real. You know,
right,
people think
right.
It's not, but it's very real. All you have to do is get involved in your school system. And when I say that, you know, volunteer a lot and you'll see a lot.
Right. Now, I know we were talking the other day about some other issues that maybe don't necessarily capture everybody's attention. And I'm actually going to address this question to Mr. Clopton. And we were talking on Sunday about some things that the NAACP was doing with veterans and some things that they were doing with providing insurance for other nonprofit organizations. Can you talk a little bit about those things?
Yes, Robert. There are partner organizations within and without the NAACP that we are partnershiped with due to the fact that their goals, their aims, ideas, or ideals are the same as the NAACP.
Right.
However, when they have a movement, say a protest, when they have a get-together, say Mobile County training reunion, all towns.
Yes, yes.
They need liability insurance.
Okay.
And NAACP is strong enough and large enough to provide the liability insurance for these partner organizations.
Oh, wow.
In the event that something happens.
That is a great resource.
Right.
My most recent partnership was the climate change debate that took place at Bienville Square.
Mm-hmm. I remember that event.
Yes, we furnished the insurance for that one most recently.
All right, that was great. And could you talk a little bit about the relationship with Housing One and some of the stuff that you were trying to do in order to help veterans?
Actually, that's Housing First.
Housing First, I'm sorry. Thank you.
And basically what we're trying to do in that respect is to help our veterans by getting them off of the street, the ones that are homeless, et cetera.
Oh, wow.
And we are partnered with Housing First to serve as a mediator.
Okay.
My Veteran Affairs Committee that's led by Dr. Cleveland, their primary focus right now is to serve veterans and active military people.
Okay.
However, when they encounter a person that's living on the street, a veteran that's living on the street, we refer them to Housing First.
Right.
Our partnership organization. And what they can do is provide shelter, home, apartment, or whatever for up to 9 months for that vet to get them off the street and help educate them and get them back to a work and a living environment.
Right. And these are two things that are desperately needed in our community that aren't limited exclusively to African-American people, one. And it's another example of something NAACP is doing that may sort of flow underneath the radar screen from time to time. Mr. Barnett, are you still on the line?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the last question that I wanted to ask you before we let you go is, I was really struck by the number of activities on the Baldwin County side that were related to issues of voting. Can you talk a little bit about any of the voter registration or restoration initiatives that you guys have participated in?
Yeah, well, we just had a voter education seminar last Saturday.
Okay.
And it was like, you know, to restore your right to vote, the STAR ID. I mean, we had about 12 different issues that we was trying to educate people about. And we also going to have it November the 9th, next Saturday, at Macedonia Baptist Church.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, that's absolutely great. And the last thing that I'll just kind of touch on with this is that in addition to voter registration, I know you guys have both been doing some work with voter restoration. Mr. Clopton, can you talk to that at all about the voter restoration efforts that are happening?
Well, yes. In the words of Dr. King from his Birmingham jail, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Absolutely.
We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly.
Oh, absolutely.
Therefore, absolutely. Our Political Affairs Committee, led by Ms. Jasmine Washington Cook, canvasses nearly every week. During their canvassing, if they meet a person or is referred a person that has lost their voting privileges due to incarceration, they make an attempt to, A, contact that person, B, supply them with the necessary documentation in order to get their votes privileges restored.
Right.
And we follow up with them, up to and including from A to Z, get them registered, get their rights restored, get them educated, get them to vote. And to get them to vote, we will make way via transportation to make sure that they have this opportunity to vote.
Okay.
So, you know, it's great because we feel that an injustice is being done to those people who've served their time.
Okay. Well, I think that that has been a great start to this conversation. And I think from what you said already that the NAACP is not a racist organization. It is an organization that has a racial focus but is open to everybody and is actually doing programmatic work that helps everybody regardless of what their actual racial background is.
That's correct. And if I could do one thing is restate our mission, which is to ensure the political, educational, social, and economic equality of rights for all people and to eliminate race-based hatred. And to
Absolutely.
Eliminate race-based discrimination.
Right. Absolutely. Thank That's you so much for that, Mr.
Crystal
Clopton.
Clear. That's great.
So actually, it looks like we have another caller. So let's go to the phone lines right now and see who we have on the air. Hello, you're on with Kennedy for Alabama.
Hi.
Hi. Who do we have on the line?
It's Jenny Aris.
Jenny Aris. Thank you so much for calling in to Kennedy for Alabama. So have you been listening to the topic so far?
I have, and I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so the question of the day is, can something be racial without being racist? So what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so, oh my gosh, I want to jump through the phone right now. Because I have so many calls. Here's the thing. So I teach.
Jenny, speak up just a little bit louder if you can, please.
Sure, can you hear me now?
Yes, yes, we can hear
okay.
you.
Okay, I was saying that, I have so much that I want to say about this topic because it's such an important one, and I think that there's so much packed into it and so much that's often anyway, here's what I do. So when I teach and I talk about racism, what I do is I put on the board racism equals power plus prejudice.
Okay.
And so when you think about that power element, so it's not just the prejudice that's at play here, right? So and the reason that this comes up a lot is because my students throw the word reverse racism
around a lot.
And so what I'll say, and it makes them really uncomfortable when we first start talking about it, is that, y'all, reverse racism isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is not, because it's missing that power element.
Right. They're usually trying to equate reverse racism with prejudice, which can happen in both directions.
Right. So prejudice is bad. Discrimination is bad. But it doesn't have, it's not coupled. When it's coupled with the systems, the social and institutional power that then codifies or enforces that prejudice into society. And you see this with, disproportionate number of people of color in prisons or voting rights or educational inequalities or distribution of wealth. I mean, there's all kinds of examples of institutional racism, right?
Absolutely.
But it's that prejudice plus power.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And I like the way that you explain that.
It's a great
mathematical equation. Let me pause just for a second.
Sure.
And this is just for the purposes of clarity for the listening audience. How would you describe yourself from a racial and an ethnic perspective?
Okay, so I am Mexican American.
Okay.
I was born in Mexico, so I would consider myself Latina. And,
okay.
I think a lot of, I'd also have, I guess, what I would call the privilege of passing because
okay.
some people see me and they see a white woman.
Okay.
But that I am Latina.
Okay.
And so,
Thank you for explaining that. And I actually want to go down that path just a little bit. I know you and I were having a Facebook IM exchange, mm-hmm. and we were talking about the term Latinx, I believe was the term.
Yes.
And I was seeking to educate myself because you had mentioned that you had an occasion where you were in class and it was the first time a student had heard his name pronounced the correct way.
Yes.
So given that topic of Latinx versus Latino or Latina, would you like to just share some thoughts as it pertains to this particular conversation that we're having?
Sure. Thank you for asking. And I think, like I said to you, that to me it really does come down to people's individual choice, right?
Okay.
Like if someone feels comfortable calling themselves Latinx, then by all means, I don't feel like I want to impose my belief on them and not give them the, you know, to impose any judgment on that.
Of course.
But for me personally, as someone who is a native Spanish speaker, Spanish is my first language, I'm not comfortable using Latinx because it's not a Spanish word.
Okay.
So I feel more comfortable saying it in my native tongue, saying Latina, because that
right.
is also so it's Spanish and English, right?
Absolutely.
So I do feel like it's been a little bit anglicized. And so for me personally, it's not the term that I prefer. But again, I can appreciate what they were trying to do there with the, you know, the gender and everything. But it's not my preferred term.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for explaining that to us. And we have about 30 seconds before we go
sure.
to the break. So there's an interesting project that you have going on your end. Would you like to tell the listening audience what that is?
Yay. I am running for County Commissioner, District 3. And
yay.
So I'm super excited
yay.
About that.
Yay.
That's fantastic.
Well, Jenny, we are very happy that you're running for office. Of course, we are always thankful to everything that you did to help us out when we were running for office. And
aww.
We will look forward to doing your candidate spotlight here in the not-too-distant future.
Super excited. Can't wait. And thank you all for everything you're doing with this show and just in general. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks,
thanks a lot for calling in, Jenny. We'll talk to you soon.
Right. Y'all have a great night.
All right.
You too.
Well, I think we are just about to head to the break. So we will see you guys on the other side. Stay tuned for more Kennedy for Alabama.
It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do, and don't you ever forget that.
And now, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. I'm your show host, Robert Kennedy Jr., and we just completed a first half hour of a fantastic conversation addressing the topic of whether or not something could be racial without being racist. So one of the things that we were really excited about doing here at Kennedy for Alabama was just taking the time to interview some normal, everyday citizens to just kind of get their perspective on some things. And so we have a surprise guest, an audience that I'm going to introduce here in just a second. But before I do that, I want to go to the phone line. We had someone call during the last break, and I just wanted to give that person the opportunity to share some thoughts. So you are on the line with Kennedy for Alabama.
Good evening, Robert. And I had the opportunity to meet you in Auckland a number of months ago down in the bayou, and I want to say I appreciate this show so much.
Oh, thank you so much for that feedback.
I just, it's just so important in today's time. And my wife corrected me the other day, and I'm an old white guy.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So I was born in the 50s. I come along in the school system in the late 60s, early 70s.
Okay.
So right around the time of integration. So I refer to black people as black people. And she said, I should refer to them as African American. And I said, nobody from the black community has ever corrected me one way or the other. So I always end up being confused as to, I mean, other than if I know their name, I just refer to them by their name. But as far as in a contextual situation where I'm having a conversation, I don't want to offend anybody.
Right.
So how do I go about having that conversation? I mean, that's one of those things that I always struggle with.
Well, here's the first thing, and I want to compliment you on this, is that you took the time to ask.
Thank you.
And so one of the things that we experienced, I know you said we met down the bayou. There were a number of times on the campaign trail last year when Aquilin and I would be the only African Americans in the room. And you would be surprised the number of times that people came up and they just asked us questions just like you did. And the one thing that I always say is I don't by any stretch of the imagination speak for all black people, but for all intents and purposes, most of the folks that I know with would consider the two terms synonyms to each other. And the reason for that is you have a subcategory of black people who are referred to as American descendants of enslaved people, so folks who actually came out of that tradition. And then you also have a number of people who would be classified as black immigrants who came to the United States maybe from some of the African nations a little bit closer whose family did not necessarily descend from slaves. So because of that, using either of those two terms is more than appropriate. And just like you did with me and Auckland tonight, if you have any questions with anybody, just ask. They're not going to be offended by that.
The other thing, too, is I appreciate your guest because up until tonight, I always thought that the NAACP was mainly for colored people. I didn't realize it allowed other ethnic cultures into their ranks or so.
Absolutely, that's the case. And we would love to have you come out to one of our events and just spend a little time, just like we're doing on the phone right now. Let's just spend a little time together to get to know each other a little bit more. So thank you so much for calling in. So with that, I would like to introduce to the listening audience Mr. Rick Collins. Rick, how you doing this evening?
Robert, I'm doing great. What an honor just to be here with you and Aquilin and Phil.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, we're really glad you're here. Like I was saying before, one of the things that we wanted to do at Kennedy for Alabama was just take the time to talk to normal, everyday people about the issues of the day. But before we get into some of your personal stuff, did you have any thoughts on the topic that we've been discussing so far that you'd like to share with the listening audience?
Well, if I could, let me just mention something else first, Robert,
sure.
If I can.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to announce here publicly that I filed to run for the U.S. House of Representatives seat, District 1, as a Democrat.
Congratulations on that.
Congratulations.
So yeah, I'm very excited.
Now we are up to three
That's
candidates with Dr. J.T. Eberhardt, Dr. Keani Gardner, and now Mr. Rick Collins. This is a good day.
Yes,
this is
a good day. Thank you. I'm very excited. It was about a 90-day discernment process for me, which is, as you know, from running in 2018.
It didn't take us that long, by the way.
Well, it took me 90 days.
I tried
to be patient because in the past, as a younger person, I was a little bit more impulsive, and I'd get into things impulsively. And I told myself, I said, I'm going to discern. I'm going to pray over this and take my time.
Right.
In the last 90 to 120 days, I was doing that. And it was hard. That was a difficult period for me. And then about a month ago, I went from 50% in to 85% in to 100+% in.
Right.
And ever since then, it's been a lot of peace, a lot of excitement. And I'm ready to get rolling. I've already got started in this process.
Well, as I mentioned before, congratulations. I remember personally when we decided that we were going to enter public life. It was during the 2016 cycle with all the craziness that was actually happening on the debate stage on both sides of the aisle. And then to get to Election Day and see that Representative Byrne was running unopposed, we said, you know what? We need to have other voices. We need to give people choices. And so when we decided to do our thing in 2018, there were two of us in a Democratic primary. And so now to see here 2 years later that there are already three declared candidates, that is absolutely fantastic. So, again, congratulations.
There's positive momentum. That's awesome.
So I know we'll end up having you back in for a much more detailed conversation a little bit later on. But if the one question that folks always ask candidates is, why should they consider your candidacy when you're comparing it to the other candidates who have been in the race, declared candidates for a little bit longer?
Well, I think I bring to the table a passion for issues. I've been involved in some public causes before, and I'll just mention them quickly. I ran for city council in 2004 in a special election for District 7, and I got involved in door-to-door campaigning. The Firefighters Union at that time had endorsed me, and we're going.
Okay.
We had a team of people every night going throughout District 7 door-to-door. I loved it. It was just absolutely thrilling, and I lost a close election to a strong candidate.
Okay.
But then before that, I got involved in an environmental cause. ExxonMobil was going to put a liquid gas plant on Mobile Bay, and it happened to be near a real estate project that I was working on. I'm a real estate broker.
Okay.
And it's at the Navy Homeport site. Well, we got involved, and we ended up opposing that publicly. I went to Washington, did a lot of things involved with that. But so I've been involved. I get involved in a passion, and I'm all in. And I'm all in for this race. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, that is great. Just in terms of your background, because we do have a few more minutes, just where did you grow up? Where did you go to school?
Yeah, I'm proud to say that I grew up in Mobile in a Catholic family. I went to St. Dominic's and then McGill-Tulin, and I went to Alabama. Had a business degree from Alabama.
Okay.
So my family, large family, there's eight kids in the family and many, many nieces and nephews. I've got three grandkids.
Okay.
And in fact, my newest grandson is named after me, and he was born just 13 days ago.
Oh, wow. So, congratulations.
And he lives in Midtown with my son and daughter-in-law.
Nice. Well, Rick, thank you so much. Actually, really excited that we had someone who was able to announce on the show.
Yeah.
We definitely look forward to working with you once the qualification period ends. And they're gonna have their hands full dealing with us during this election cycle. So thank you so much, and come back and see us again at Kennedy for Alabama.
Thank you all.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All
appreciate
right.
it.
Yes.
All right. So it looks like we have another caller on the phone line. So let's go to the phones. Hello, you are on the phone with Kennedy for Alabama. Who do we have this evening?
Hey, Robert. This is George Sneed.
Hey, George Sneed. How are you doing this evening?
Great. Great topic tonight. I've actually enjoyed hearing some of the perspectives from some of your callers.
Yeah, this has actually been really good. And I'm glad that you actually had the opportunity to call in. So just in the spirit of full disclosure, tell the audience just a little bit about yourself and a little bit about how we know each other, and then we'll go into some specific questions I have for you about tonight's topic.
I am a native of Mobile, Alabama, and we are long-term friends. You know, I've always been a big supporter of you and really happy to see with this new endeavor. I enjoy the show. I'm glad to see that you're giving a different perspective to this audience. I think it's going to be great for the community.
Thanks a lot. So George, we've been having the conversation in terms of misperceptions that happen primarily outside of the African-American community, and we use the NAACP as an example of that. What I'd like you to do is, can you share with the audience the story that we had when you and I got stuck on the side of the road in Pensacola back when we were coming out of high school?
Yeah, that really takes me back a lot. It makes me think of your mother. I think that was a situation when she didn't want us to go over to the beach, and managed to go anyway, being the teenagers that we were. And we were on Pensacola Beach, got turned around, literally like a little lost, and decided to make a U-turn in your, was that a 77?
Something that mustard yellow lemon
it was like
that we
mustard
had.
Mustard yellow, but nevertheless, we got stuck in the sand.
Yes,
and we were in need of being rescued. And I know at that time we had these I'd say, preconceived notions about men in that area driving big pickups with a winch on the front and
right.
the gun rack, which were common at that time to be seen. But nevertheless, when the two of us were stuck in 90-degree heat on that little sand dune, it was one of those fellows that pulled over and offered us some help. And he connected that pickup truck with the winch to that 77 Celica and pulled us right on out. And then we were able to get back in time before your mom got home from work. But I know for me as a teenager, it definitely enlightened me. It really changed my perspective, because that was not the person that I would have expected that was going to be the hero for me that day. And I think it opened my mind at a critical time before all my feelings and personalities had been completely formed. And, you know, I think it's just a great perspective, considering the climate that we have now, is that we really have to keep our minds open. And, you know, we all love this country, and we all want to do the best for one another in the end.
Yeah, and George, I want to add a couple of things to the story just so the listening audience gets a full perspective. So here we are, two young black boys at the time, over in Pensacola Beach, stuck in the sand. The first thing is, a number of people drove by and
right.
didn't stop.
And it was hot.
Right? They just saw us standing over there, they drove by. The second thing is, we actually had a police officer who stopped by to check on us as well. Do you remember that?
And I
so
do remember
there,
that.
There was a lot of angst associated with that. And so the police officer was just trying to make sure we were not in distress, right? So that, you know, we weren't going to die on the side of the road. And then he left. And yeah. so when the guy pulled up, it was literally one of the monster trucks. You know, we talk about mud, 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 power, power, power. The truck had a Confederate flag on the back and a shotgun rack, which, again, we were used to seeing because people used to drive that way to school all of the time. And so for that, out of all the individuals who drove by us, for that to be the individual who stopped, and it wasn't like we had any money. He just hooked it up to us, yanked us out, and then all of a sudden we were back on the road. It is one of the things that caused us to challenge our own stereotypes. And so, again, I'm not trying to get into how anybody feels about issues of the Confederate flag, because I'm not a fan, Confederate monuments and stuff like that, because I'm not a fan of that as well. But rather than stereotyping each other, if we take the time to understand each other a little bit better, then just like the gentleman who called in before, we can start to figure out how to work our way through these particular issues. So,
absolutely.
Well, George, do you have a little bit of time to stay with us through the break? I'd love to talk
absolutely.
To you a little bit more.
Sure.
All right. Well, you guys stay on the line. We will see you on the other side of the break. You have been listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Lines are open at 251-343-0106. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. So, George, are you still on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Thank you for staying with us. So, as we went into the break, Aquiline was recounting a similar story that happened to us much more recently that she wants to share with the audience. So, let her do that, and then I'll circle back to you. Is that okay?
Okay.
Yeah, but George, before I do that, I've got to let you know that I don't know if you've corrupted my husband or not, but I would never have known him to have chosen to hide something from his mother. So, you know, I'm learning a lot.
Hey, you know that Vivi didn't play.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, it was all me.
Yeah, okay. So, but yeah, you know, but yeah, just thinking back to, I mean, this has happened a lot actually, but California, we were actually in the car together. We were heading up, what is it, 83? I don't remember, some highway, and mm-hmm. we had a blowout. And
yes.
It was a beautiful day, and we pulled over. We were actually, I don't know if we were in the fast lane or not, we pulled off, and Robert was kind of decked out and, you know, looking good, and basically not
dressed
changing
up to go somewhere.
Right, not changing tire clothes. And I remember he got out, and he started, you know, going through the trunk and trying to figure out things and put stuff together. And I was like, how are we going to do this? You're going to mess up your shoes, your clothes. Well, all of a sudden, guy on a motorcycle comes up. He's like tatted out, tats everywhere.
Riding his Harley.
He's got his bandana on. And, you know, he comes up. And I was like, oh, my, you know. And he says, you need some help. And I was like, well, yes, you know, we wouldn't mind some help. And he was like, don't worry about it. You know, you're all dressed. Don't, you know, and he basically asked Robert to kind of move over. And yep. He just did it. He just hooked us completely up. And anyway, it was really, it was a huge blessing. But it's just not the person I would have thought would have just pulled off and, you know, taken the time out of their day. He had something he was doing, and it was just fantastic. So,
and it goes against what we were talking about before. It's countering stereotypes.
Absolutely.
So he looked like, if I was to do a stereotypical image, what you would picture like a Hell's Angel.
That's
to
right.
look like. Mm-hmm. And for him just to pull over, it turns out that he was a mechanic. So this is the type of stuff that he did in his day job. And he saw somebody in need and just pulled over and offered him some help. And just imagine how much better our world would be if we were doing that with each other on a regular basis.
Total blessing. Thank you for sharing that story.
You know, and that didn't make the news. I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing that really probably happens a lot more than we all realize.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So George, going back to the core discussion topic, can something be racial without being racist? So I know you've been listening throughout the course of the hour. What other thoughts do you have that you'd like to share?
I mean, I absolutely feel this way. I think your caller, who was the educator,
yes,
probably gave the best perspective. You know, I've experienced a lot of racism in my life. Being an African American man from the South, I immediately recognize it. But I do feel that way. I do feel that something can, you know, be racial with not necessarily being racist. It's unfortunate. You know, I'm hearing a term today where I think people are kind of intellectualizing things that are racist now.
Can you give us an example of that?
Like inherently being biased and things of that nature.
Okay.
It's basically the same thing.
Right.
But yes, it's something that I think is innate in all of us.
Right.
But to me, what I've found is communication works best. It's it also makes me think of another one of your callers who had the question about the term African American, which is
right.
my personal preference, but I do know some people who prefer to be called black.
Right.
But I liked that he was asking about it.
And that's really what we're trying to do here at Kennedy for Alabama is create environments that are safe where people can be inquisitive and ask questions and we can respond and have a conversation without judgment.
Exactly.
Yep,
exactly. And of course, I have, you know, friends from all different perspectives and ethnicities, and from time to time, I can tell they'll run things by me because they feel comfortable asking, and
right.
they know that I won't judge them, and, you know, they have their own feelings about these situations, but they just want maybe a perspective from me because I am African American.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that because, again, it's more communication, is back and forth. And we may not always agree, but at least we're talking about the subject in a meaningful way. And that, to me, is how we'll all get better.
Yeah, and you really did touch on something there. When I think about the people that I'm closest to in the world, you know, my brother and Johnny and you, it's just we have years and years and years of relationship. So when I take that and now I cross the proverbial color line and I start thinking about my white friends that I'm closest in the world to, it starts with the guys that I sat in class with from the 6th grade to the 12th grade. It continues on with the guys that I met at the Naval Academy and I served with in the fleet. And now because we have that 30-plus years of relationship, We can sit down and discuss and debate issues and still walk away from those conversations loving each other. And so if there's a way for us to start to recreate that in our daily lives, and I think we do truly have an opportunity for the future.
Absolutely.
So, Auckland, I was thinking a little bit about faith in action. I was thinking a little bit about shrink the divide. We had about a minute and a half before the program ends. Was there anything that you wanted to share on this particular topic?
No, absolutely. I will tell you, I was really shocked when I moved here to Alabama. Coming from the outside, you know, you hear about things with Alabama, and I was like, well, what am I going to walk into? My husband's from there. I know he's a great person. I know there are some great people. But what am I walking into? And what I found that I walked into, one of the organizations was called Shrink the Divide. If you don't know about it, please look it up. Fantastic
Absolutely.
Organization.
Absolutely.
It came about, I guess, maybe about 5 years ago now, if I'm adding the time right. But ministers had gotten together and realized that, you know what, the most segregated day, well, and this is not a huge thing because MLK had mentioned this earlier, but the most segregated day of the week was Sunday. How do we find ways to connect? Why is that day so segregated? And especially on something so important as faith. And it's coming together over lunch, breaking bread together. That's the key. And really just having that opportunity to speak to each other, ask each other questions, that's what begins to tear those walls down.
And with both of those organizations, Shrink the Divide, as well as Faith in Action, you have black and white, Hispanic, Asian, male and female, various faith traditions all coming together.
That's right.
Not discussing and debating theology, but trying to focus on issues of social justice.
It's about love. The end Absolutely. Of the day, it's love.
Absolutely. Well, George, thanks a lot for calling in. Aquiline, thank you so much for helping us wrap up. And to the listening audience, thank you so much for tuning in to Kennedy for Alabama. We really appreciate all the support that you're providing us, and we will look forward to continuing to connect with you next week. Until then, my name is Robert Kennedy Jr., your Chief Accountability Advocate, and this is Kennedy for Alabama.